accession number 10421, reel 6.
Or it was, I should think, about early December. I can't really remember the exact date now, but at the beginning, you know, first week in December.
And you got your promotion?
In March.
Was that rapid?
Yes, for those days it was rapid. Normally, it was because of the shortage, I think. Normally you waited maybe 2 or 3 years before you got a Lance Corporal stripe, but obviously there was a shortage of NCOs, and so some had to be made up. Because don't forget, you had a lot of old soldiers that wouldn't take promotion. I was keen, I wanted promotion, because the Lance Corporal stripe is the first step. Once you get that, then it's up to you then, because after that it's more or less a time promotion. In conjunction with your seniority, and in conjunction with how good you are, of course.
What increased responsibilities did this bring?
Well, it meant that you had orderly duties, which meant you on guard. You were IC reliefs, which meant you every time there's a change of guard, you were responsible for marching out your men and changing the guard and bringing the other two back. Then you had such things as a company orderly corporal, which meant that you run the various duties, paraded fatigues, paraded your church parades. Then another one was your battalion duties. You were given battalion orderly corporal, and that meant going round with the battalion orderly sergeant round meals and collecting battalion orders for companies. And things like that. Everything concerned with the battalion.
Can we move to the kind of training that you are now doing? You're in the battalion. Mm. What kind of activities did you?
Well, we, as a rifle company, just carried out ordinary rifle duties. But you had certain of the draft who were posted to different departments. And they would carry out specialist duties, like a machine gunner, or a signaller, or orderly room. You went to orderly room. You didn't do very much training because your job was to learn orderly room procedure as an orderly room clerk. I was a company clerk for a while, which meant that I. Did a little bit of typing and took out posted company detail and things like that. So you didn't do a lot of training until the training season came along. And that was the time when we used to go, as they called it then, on manoeuvres.
Yes, I was going to ask you about manoeuvres. Mm. Just before we come to that, which company were you posted to?
I was posted to C Company.
And that was a rifle company?
That was a rifle company, yes.
And how many men would there be in that company?
Well, at that time, very under strength, because battalions abroad were always kept up to strength of 1,000 men. So that any time there was a shortage of men in the battalion, then drafts would be sent from the home battalion overseas to make that battalion up. So the companies were under strength, probably only 80 men, where there should have been probably about 120.
And rifle company, can you describe to me what a rifle company, what is a rifle company?
Well, it is a company three platoons split into sections, the ones that are always in the front. In the slit trenches or whatever, They're the ones that go forward, whereas your machine gunners are in a fixed position, more or less. And your signals, of course, are spread out with your companies and go into the following with the company commander as a signaller. But your rifle companies are under a platoon commander, a lieutenant, and under a platoon sergeant, and then you're a section commander who's a full corporal, and he has a lance corporal with him. And they're the ones that do the job, really. The others are more or less a backup, which you've got to have in any training. You've got to have your backup, even if it's artillery as well, which is a backup, but absolutely essential to help the infantryman.
So your company was constituted three platoons?
Yes, three platoons.
And how many sections per platoon?
Three sections per platoon. So in a company you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You had nine platoons.
You would obviously go through weapon training of some kind.
Oh, yes. Yes, just revision, except that you went on the range a lot more. I forget the range we used to go on now there. I don't think it could have been Purbright. But and of course, you had your battalion rifle meeting once a year as well to find out the battalion shot who got extra pay when he wore his cross rifles. Another threatens a day for you, see? Cross rifles.
So you're firing your rifles on the range much more often.
Mm.
What other weapons?
And your Lewis gun, of course.
Still with the Lewis gun.
The Bren gun wasn't in... It was only in process of being brought in to the British Army then. And we hadn't got issue with it.
Had you come across any anti-tank weapon by this time?
No.
The mortars? Did you?
2-inch, which was only little small light bomb. It fired about 300, 400 yards. It was part of a platoon, so it wasn't a specialist weapon. Every man had to be able to use it.
So what did you have? One of these 2-inch mortars per platoon?
Yes.
You hadn't come across the 3-inch mortar yet?
No, that's a specialist weapon.
I see.
That's the one I forgot to mention. That's another specialist weapon that was in the battalion, the 3-inch mortar.
Route marches? Did you have many?
Oh, yes, we had route marches. Not a lot, but more than you did at the depot.
On the same lines?
On the same lines, yes. Probably a little longer.
What about your tactics and field training?
Well, most of that was done on Salisbury Plain, on your annual manoeuvres. It entailed, I remember the first one I was on, actually it was the only one I was on, because I left the battalion the next year. It was an endurance test, really. Even the captain, who was later became a colonel, Colonel McBain, but he was my company commander at the time. And he was a good soldier, 14 war, military cross. Even he complained, and I heard him say, this is not an exercise, it's an endurance test. But strangely enough, it was the first time I heard the enemy coming, and they were the Scots Greys. And in the distance we heard the horses, the noise of the horses galloping along the roads. And that was the enemy that we were up against, the Scots Greys. No tanks then, just the horses.
So the manoeuvres was a once a year exercise.
Yes, and a lot was put into it. Now this may feel strange. Now Mr. Hall Belisha, was then the War Minister, or Secretary of State for War, and this shows that what the state of the British Army was in at the time. He wanted to see a battalion on a war footing. Right? So we were formed up, and it took three battalions infantry battalions to make one battalion on war footing. That was how low the strengths of the battalion were. And so I think at the time it was the Manchesters ourselves and another regiment all formed up together to make this full-strength battalion. And it took the whole three battalions to show Harbour Leisure what a war... That, I think, was because of the war scare coming on.
So you would leave Woking for Salisbury Plain. At what time of the year was this?
This summer. This would be August, July, August.
1938.
And
did you move by rail?
Well, I'll tell you how I moved. I moved by bicycle. I was given charge of a cycle, cycle orderlies. They all belonged to different companies, and I was told to take them to a certain place, and then you'd to go to their companies because you were a cycle orderly. Any message, then you got on your bike, pedalled away like mad to wherever you had to go. And many a time I thought, I wish I'd never taken this cycle, because when the battalion had to cross some rough country, I had to push the bike as well as me equipment. I had a bicycle to push over the rough ground. And the bicycles those days were those heavy frame things. And I thought I was on a good thing, but I'm not. And I was glad when this exercise came to a finish and I was able to get on the bicycle and go back to the barracks. But of course, we also bivouacked out for a time before we went on the second day's march. But don't forget that when I talk about training, the private soldier or the Lance Corporal really didn't know what it was all about. I mean, the big picture was always with the officers and the company commander, the adjutant. So the private soldier and the Lance Corporal, even the sergeants, did what they were told, put your platoon there and put your platoon there. But like in the army was always the same, there wasn't enough information to the chap, the little chap who had to do a job. So you really hadn't a lot to talk about, except the things like pushing your bike over a rough ground and sleeping rough in your bivouacs, going to church parade on manoeuvres. You went to church parade. As a matter of fact, the officer in charge of the church parade at this particular time was somebody you met, Peter Jeffries. He was a lieutenant, and Peter was he was a very strict officer at the time. He even told his junior officer, who was a second lieutenant, stand to attention when I'm bringing the battalion up to parade. And the officer's forgotten, you see, and he got told straight away.
These were open air.
Open air, yes, yes.
Any other memories of the manoeuvres that you went
through? Not.
Did you carry out certain schemes?
Yes, you did little exercises. An attack on a hill cutting some of the troops off at a certain place, camouflaging, doing camouflage and things like that. It's over 50 years ago, and it's getting a little bit dim now. But it was training.
How long did it last?
2 weeks, was the, and of course we were out in the open for the 2 weeks. It appears to me those days that we got better weather than we get now in the summer, but I can't remember it pouring down with rain, anything like that.
Did you have any link with other arms of the services on manoeuvres? Air Force?
Not those days, no. No. I mean, say the only thing I remember is the Scots Greys, and we would say, they're on the way. And that was the horses. And, I mean, no tanks, you see. It was purely a company exercises, really. I mean, you didn't get to the big stuff until the whole division, and I never got to the point where the whole division went on manoeuvres, just the battalion.
Can I come back to some of the specialist training that you mentioned earlier. Within your battalion, were there specialist sections or companies?
There was a machine gun company, which was the Vickers.
How many machines did they have?
I think they had six machine guns in the company. I think they had 6 3-inch mortars, and then of course you had your signallers, who had they had a signal platoon. Then you had your buglers, of course. They were a platoon of their own. Of course, they're in headquarter company, same as the signallers and the machine gunners and the mortarmen.
You didn't do any specialist training?
I didn't do any, no. I was in a rifle company all the time.
Looking back again, Mr. Thornton, the training that you were getting with the battalion, did you find it, do you feel that it was relevant for what was to come?
Well, we didn't know, you see, but when it did come in the end, we thought, well, we weren't prepared. There was a time, just after we came back from manoeuvres, that the 38, getting on towards the latter end, that the war scare came. Now, believe it or not, but we were in the rear of the barracks, digging trenches, the same to get practice in digging trenches, the same as trenches as they dug during the 14 War. So it showed that nobody really knew what was to come. Even the quartermaster, the rumour was that he had to send away and ask how long it would take to sharpen bayonets. So they were still expecting bayonet charges those days.
When you say rumours of the war which were coming, did you actually see and hear these rumours? What form did they take?
Well, it was talked by politicians about Hitler. Hitler. Well, we knew that Hitler had marched into a country. I don't know which one it was now. Whether it was Czechoslovakia or can't remember beginning the war. Whether he marched before the war, whether he marched in Czechoslovakia or Poland. But you see, they must have had an idea that something may blow up, and so we started to get prepared. But one thing probably I forgot to mention that on the exercise I was carrying a wooden gun, and I think when you mentioned something about anti tank, I think it was a replica of an anti tank gun, and to me it seemed to be a damn heavy thing, but I was carrying a wooden gun.
Can I ask you, Mr. Thornton, how the battalion was organised?
Yeah, well, we'll start. I think we'll start at the top. You had your commanding officer, and then his adjutant, the RSM, the chief clerk, and the orderly sergeant. They were all in battalion headquarters. Then, of course, you had your rifle companies A, B, C, and D. Each had, those days, a captain as company commander. Then you had your second command. Who could also be a captain. As a matter of fact, my captain, as I said before, was Captain McBain, and the second in command was Captain Poet, who now General Poet. And then you had your three platoon commanders, could be a second lieutenant or a lieutenant, and then your three platoon sergeants, your three platoon corporals and your platoon lance corporals. Of course, then in the headquarters of the company, you had the sergeant major, the colour sergeant, and his staff of clerks, runner, etc. That goes for each company. Your headquarter company, of course, exactly the same. Company commander, second command, and then for each of your specialist platoons, and his sergeants, and his corporals, and his lance corporals. That took in all your specialists. That was roughly the composition of a battalion. The other spare parts were the band and the bugles. Nobody liked the band and bugles because they said they seemed to get away with everything, no guards and no duties and things like that.
How did the battalion instill into you loyalty?
Well, it was competition, really, I think, and pride. Everybody was saying about how good what a good regiment was, things like that. And of course, being a Durham man, or a Northumberland, a lot of them in, took a pride in it. And if anybody spoke, even though they were themselves, if anybody outside spoke about the Durham Light Infantry in a derogatory manner, then there would be trouble. So even the rough man had loyalty and pride in his regiment.
You were undergoing educational training.
Well, you see, at the depot, you started your education at the depot, and you went in for your third class certificate. You had to have that before you could be promoted to Lance Corporal. Then you carried on with your education at the battalion to get your second class. You had to have your second class before you could be promoted to corporal and sergeant. And you had to have your first class before you could be promoted to warrant officer. So therefore you carried on doing your education periods right through your training until eventually you got your first class, which was yours. Because don't forget, a first-class education took in logarithms, whatever logarithms, we always used to say, whatever logs and cosines and sines had to do with the army and or would help us in a war, we didn't know. Those were parts of an algebra. Those were parts of the mathematical part of it. Then you had map reading, a compulsory subject, English, a compulsory subject. And then you had, that was three, and then you had the fourth one, which was you could pick higher mathematics or current affairs, but you had to have the four. And you believe me, some of the warrant officers, they worked damned hard. They slaved to get that first class before they were warrant officers. They slaved absolutely to get that first class. When they got, once they'd got it, it went. Was finished. Huh? It was really a waste of time because you didn't use it anymore. Your map reading, maybe. But your mathematics and your English, well, you should have heard some of the English on the square. Yeah.
As part of your education, were they still instilling into you the history of the
regiment? Oh, yes. Yes, we had regimental history periods where they went through the whole of the history of the regiment from its formation and its Victoria Crosses and everything, the battles, battle honours. As a matter of fact, we used to have to learn the battle honours at one time.
Can we now talk about the officers and NCOs? What are your options of the type of officer and NCO you had in the battalion?
Well, we had one particular sergeant. He was the signal sergeant, disciplinarian. He would stand to attention to a lance corporal, but woe betide that lance corporal if he wasn't stand to attention to him. But he stood to attention when he was telling somebody off. He finished up commissioned later on, Harry Qualthrough, got the military cross, I think. But that was the man he was. He said, if the man has got to stand to attention to me, then I'm standing attention while he's talking to me. Then we had a chap, the provost sergeant, who was called John Henry. Now, they talked about John, frightened to death of John Henry. They said he would put his grandmother in jail. Now, he was the right man for the job. Nothing got past you, past him at all, going through the guard room. And it didn't matter what anybody did, you'd be inside in seconds. That was John Henry. I forget his last name now. And the bugle major, Tommy Mason. Now, Tommy was a fine bugler. Believe it or not, he could play the bugle through his rifle. The rifle with the bolt out. And Tommy could play a tune on it. I hope this will go down, but it's a bit, you know, we cut out of it. Like, but Tommy was known at one time in the barracks. He'd been drinking all night, more or less. And he got up at Rivali, and he went outside the married quarters. And instead of blowing Rivali, he blew dismount.
And that was a great cry.
It was a big laugh, really. But Tommy got in a bit of bother about it. Nobody could do anything with him because he was only blowing a bugle, you see. But it was something Tommy would do. Now Tommy was still a good soldier. And he was killed in France. But there was a lot of characters. They had names, you know. All the officers had names. I mean, the CO was Jock Hastert. You probably heard of him at the time. You probably heard of Jock, and his plaque is in the castle that we've been in today. And then we had another major called Ticker Yates. Well, his name was his nickname was Tin Arse. He was wounded in the 14th War and had a plate. And that was his nickname. And then we had two lieutenant colonels in the battalion. One was a brevet lieutenant colonel, who was a very, very senior major, and so he was given the honorary rank of lieutenant colonel, which is called brevet, Lysite Griffin. And is it nearly finished? Oh, sorry. He was a chap that is very slack. If he saw you, and he threw... How are you this morning? Now, and very, very strict soldier, probably, but that was his attitude. Another one who became a lieutenant colonel, Townsend, they call him. He would go around, very keen pistol man. He'd go around the camp and he'd have his pistol. He'd go and wouldn't be shooting. He'd just aiming all the time. Shoot at Townsend, another one. Battiscombe, called him, Captain Battiscombe, and he had one of these big, heavy moustaches, and he got a nickname of the Muskrat. But all these, don't forget, all these weren't bad. They were terms of endearment, really, the way they looked at the officer, but nothing bad about them.
No much respect.
No disrespect at all. They're all known by their... I mean, there was two Simpsons brothers, and they never called Simpson. They were called by their initials. RBY, that was... he finished up Colonel, and his brother FH. And they would refer to them as RBY and FH. The adjutant was Stallard, Captain Stallard, who was a prisoner of war. And everybody called him Tommy. Tommy Stallard. Not to his face, mind. But talking among themselves, the sergeant's mess, it would be Tommy Stallard. He's well respected, fine sportsman. And Tommy, of course, got the DSO for arranging escapes in prisoner war camp.